Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Ted Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. We are now exactly 4 weeks away from the release of Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Something that will make me happy.
Something that will make you happy. Something that does not make you happy, Chad, is the box office receipts that we got this week, representing the giant hole that was the number one movie in America, Justice League.
Before we start this, I'm just going to disclaimer. I got to watch my blood pressure, so I'm going to try to keep this down. As you saw in your Adventures in Knoxville on Twitter, I was not having a good time with that this weekend on Twitter. Not at all.
Okay. So, Chad, 18 months ago, there was a movie called Dawn of Justice. It came out. It was produced, and it was released all over the world, and it opened to somewhere around 135-140 million.
It was 166.
Yeah, 166. Then we had Suicide Squad, which was released, and it opened to over 100 million.
Yeah, I had all this down.
Yes,
you can keep going.
And then sir, we had Wonder Woman, which opened to positive critical acclaim and massive box office success.
But still, it opened to 103.
Yeah, it opened to over 100 million. Chad, what did Justice League open to this week? What did it win the box office with?
So you want the projections that kept going down, or what it actually made
as of today? Didn't the actuals come in at 93 million?
94.
94.
Yeah.
$94 million on a budget of $300 million. China is helping.
Yeah, worldwide is at like 288, so almost 3.
Mm-hmm. Which is what Thor made in like 5 days.
Yeah. So I only care about the box office in the sense of that coming in below 100 is not good for this movie, and it's going to cause Warner Brothers to have to do things. And the crux of what I'm going to say tonight is probably going to all boil down to this. Warner Brothers is stupid. And not everything. But when it comes to DC, a property that Warner Brothers itself has owned at least since the 70s, when it comes to them making DC movies, right now the exceptions would be Batman and Wonder Woman. Put those aside. When it comes to anything else, they're freaking morons. And now you've got... what is arguably should be their biggest property, Justice League, not making $100 million, and now people have to get fired over this. And once people have to get fired, that means decisions have to be made. And they've proven they don't know how to make a freaking decision worth a damn regarding this universe. Okay, I'm gonna step back now. Okay, I'll keep looking for things that's gonna set me up some more.
So Chad, that Green Lantern movie, which was considered a complete and utter disaster, it made roughly, like, what, 70? What did it open with? 70, 80?
It's probably more than that. It was enough for me to think, okay, if it has some legs, it'll do well. And I don't think it lost them money. So I don't remember what the actuals were, but it wasn't spectacular, but it wasn't, like, in the dumps.
So what we're saying is that Justice League opened to the lowest box office numbers for any film in the DC Expanded Universe canon.
Yes, probably going back, I mean,
to Green Lantern. Green Lantern would be the last movie that
had. I'm going to see what Green Lantern opened with. Well, yeah, it would have opened more than Green Lantern. Yes, Green Lantern would have been the one. And, like, before, we'll get into this, but before the movie opened, like, on Wednesday or Thursday, it was an article written, and, you know, Warner Brothers, they leaked like a sieve, and from all different angles, and they were like, the studio heads were nervous that Justice League was going to open smaller than Thor, which they considered a C-list character for Marvel, and they have all their heavy guns in Justice League, and Thor might beat them in the box office, and here we are.
And they were justified in their worrying and their concern because the internet has been ablaze with think pieces over the last 48 hours regarding the future of the DCEU.
I almost wrote one of those things. I stopped myself. I still might. But, alright. This is my thing with this whole goddamn mess. Like, we've seen the movie. We've talked about the movie. You can tell the movie has problems. You can tell that DC was trying to fix the problems. And some of that worked. Some of it didn't. Altogether, it was like a man movie. Now, if we've been talking about Justice League this whole time, like, Warner Brothers has set this up. They gave themselves a bad hand doing it. So they just had to get through this movie. So for me, when you say you have to get through this movie, it means like, win, lose, or draw. Whatever happens with this movie's going to happen, and we just move on with our plan from going forward. Now, leading up to the movie release, when all the bad reviews started coming in, the vibe seemed to be like, if this movie doesn't do well, Warner Brothers is going to be like, they're going to panic, and they're going to do stuff, and things are going to have to happen. Well, that's like the opposite of just getting through this movie. So, it's like, you knew when Zach left what he left you with. You knew what Josh, what you wanted Josh
to do. And apparently something that we found out through this process, that Zach delivered a full cut to them.
Yeah, in March. And they didn't like it. And this is when they brought in Josh to come in and do some the touch-ups and stuff.
Which leads me to believe they used the daughter's death as a reason to gracefully exit him out.
Nobody's going to say this, but if we had one top Warner exec in a moment of clarity and they knew it would never get out...
If the lasso of truth were around them?
Yeah, they would be like, I'd never wish this on anybody, but his daughter dying is probably the best thing to happen to us because we can get him out and get somebody else in. But it's not the best thing that could happen to him because, yes, while they got Joss Whedon in, they want him to come in and fix all these things, but he only had six months to do it? And they basically wanted him to redo... I know they gave Zach credit for this, so that means Zach did like 70% of the footage of Zach's, but they really wanted him to fix like 70 to 80% of the movie. In a heavy a visual effects movie, they wanted him to do this. And the result is what we got. So... I'll go all the way back. They let Batman vs Superman happen. We've talked about it as soon as it happens. Like, Justice League is supposed to start shooting the Monday after Batman vs Superman. That says Warner Brothers is just doubling down on everything. Snyder, they before Batman vs Superman came out, they announced their slate. Justice League 1 and 2 are coming out, and Zack Snyder's going to do both. And I'm like, ooh. So they really have faith in Zack. They're just putting all their money on Zack. Okay. Batman vs. Superman comes out, and it gets destroyed. And then they're like, what the hell are we going to do? This movie's supposed to start shooting tomorrow. What the hell are we going to do? So, they pump the brakes, and they stop production on that movie. Now, as we found out, well, I don't know if you saw this, but over the weekend, there's been an overload of information. But apparently, at that point, Warner Brothers had to. They came together. They had the decision to make. What are we gonna do with this movie? It's still a year and a half away. Now, do we go?
And this is still one of the last release dates left from that conference call announcement back in the day.
It's probably the last one.
Yeah.
So, do we stay the course with Zach, even though Batman vs Superman has been demolished, and we know what his vision is? Do we stay with that vision, even though people clearly don't seem to like it, even if he is lightening it up, because that's what everybody says, he was lightening it up. But for Zach, how much is lightening up really is there? Maybe it's going from Batman vs Superman back to Man of Steel, which is already divisive. So do we stay that course, or do we bite the bullet on this one, fire Zach, get another director, another writer, push production back, and we can still hit this release date, because it's a freaking year and a half from now. As we now know, they went with decision A. So, from that decision was their first mistake. Well, they've made a bunch before that, but in the context of this conversation, it's their first mistake. If you knew, and at this point you did know, that people are saying, this movie is so dour and grim and we just don't like it. Like, we like the Batman you gave us in it, But he's murdering people. And whose decision is that? Is it the story's decision to have him murder people? I'm pretty sure the story doesn't say Batman mows down people in the Batmobile. The story probably says Batman chases after the people in the Batmobile. And Zach, and because I heard him say it, he's like, no, I wanted Batman to do things where, I wouldn't say he outright murdered him, but he can probably get manslaughter. That's what your director said. So this is a director decision. So you know the decisions your director makes, and you know the people don't like those decisions. But you stuck with it. Okay, fine. You stuck with this. This is the course we're on. You push the movie back and you say, Zach, I see what you want to do, but you gotta give me some more. You gotta lighten this up some more. Okay. Push production back. They have that set visit. They show everybody the rooftop scene. The reporters come back. It's like, it looks like they're lighting up, but it looks like it might be the direction that we wanted to go in. Blah, blah, blah.
PR spun, backed in their favor.
Yes.
Goodwill earned.
So then we get Suicide Squad, which is another travesty. And I don't know how much effect it has on this particular movie, but we keep going. And then it's probably around the time that Zach gives them the cut in March. And they look at the cut and they're like, hell no. We just got destroyed for this. And you didn't give us enough. And again, you're making it like 3 hours. Zach, what are you doing? And at that point, they brought in Joss, because they'd already got Joss coming. He wants to do Batgirl. They took him in because they're auteur driven. And so why not take Joss Whedon? He comes in, like, well, you're doing this. Can you come help us and help Zach out on this? Okay, sure. The bad stuff happens. Zach has to step away. Warner Brothers is like, somebody somewhere, a bad person somewhere in the corner is like making the sign of the cross saying, thank you. And they're like, well, Joss, he's got to go. Can you come in and do these things? Okay, and we have this mandated list. Got to be under 2 hours. You got to lighten this crap up and do all this other stuff. Okay, fine. I can do that. So we moving the release date back? No. It is still in November. Y'all do realize that this is a heavy VFX movie. It takes... There's a reason they take so long. These effects take years. Like, okay, fine. Let's get everybody back and let's work on this stuff. And particularly, we're going to work on Superman. We're going to make sure he's nice, bright, loud. Everybody likes him. Wait, Henry Cavill, why do you have this big caterpillar on your face? Because I'm shooting this movie over there. Okay. Now, this is from the apparent, because of the leaks, the VFX guys that worked on this, one of them was like, you know, screw this, because we're getting bashed for this. And he put out like a list of scenes that were cut and all the VFX. And he went on about Henry Cavill's mustache. And first thing he said was, pretty much said Paramount's dicks. They're just like, Warner Brothers they were going to shave the mustache. And they were going to go in and digitally put the mustache back for the MI6 reshoots. And they were going to pay for it. And they even worked up previs from shots that Zach did for Superman and put a mustache on him. And he was like, you know, this is easier because you're putting it on. And they sent it to Paramount. It was like, we'll foot the bill for all this. Let's do it. And Paramount just like basically stuck on the bird and said, kick rocks. So as the VFX guy says, it's so much easier to put the hair on because it's just face tracking. Your face is already there. As opposed to taking it off because then you have to reconstruct his whole freaking face. So off of that decision alone, he's like, they have 4 months to do this. It's nearly impossible. Warner Brothers had to move the movie back. They wouldn't do it. Notice the trend here. Warner Brothers, he's making all these decisions and they're terrible. So a guy that you want to feature prominently in the second half of your movie, you're going to reshoot. There are only like 4 shots of Henry Cavill that's not reshot in this whole movie. So every shot of him, almost every shot of him, they've reconstructed his face. And the VFX guys are telling you this is not enough time. And they're like, nope, we got to make this work. So we get here. This cobbled together movie that has some good parts with some good characters, but its audiences have already been burned by Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Suicide Squad. So they hear about this, and it's like, it's a step in the right direction. But they hear step in the right direction after they hear all this laundry list stuff, and they're like, I ain't going. So every decision you've made has told me that you just want to get this movie out. Damn the consequences. It just has to come out. So once the movie comes out, and the audience is like, well, this is the movie you gave us, and this is how much we're giving you for it. Because obviously you didn't care enough about it to do anything else. Why are you wigging out now? You put us right here. This is everything you've done.
Accept the consequences of your actions.
Yes.
If you want to just get through it, then take the fire you're going to get from just getting through it and merely killing VFX of artists and everything else. Get through it. Have your plan in place. Like you said on our podcast, have your plan in place. Stick by your plan. And let's move forward. Just treat this as a lost cause.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever money you're going to make from this, take it and be grateful. I mean, by doing the massive amount of reshoots, you're acknowledging that you're going to take a loss on the movie almost certainly. But when you get the box office figures, when you get the 30% Rotten Tomatoes score, when you get fans displeased with the VFX, you take it. And you say, okay, we have weathered this storm. Now we can come back out the other side. We have Patty Jenkins. We have Jeff Johns. We have James Wan. We have these characters that people still like. Like, we got... They weren't hated coming out of Justice League. Some of them had better appreciation for these characters after Justice
League. I would argue everybody felt better about the characters coming out of Justice League than any of the other movies.
Right. So, you can't be, like... You have, if every one of the actions that you take emphasizes that your belief is, if we get through this halfway decent, we can move on and keep everything intact, then when you have the expected result, you can't freak out and abandon ship and leak like a sieve about how everything went so negatively. You take your hit and you move on. If you're not going to move on, or if you are wanting to secure the best possible feature, then you move the release date back. I've now heard people talking about, well, Thor's taking away its audience. Guess what? When Feige had his big announcement at Comic-Con, at El Cid, back in 2012 or 2013, wherever that was after the DC conference call. They got made fun of because they thought that the Marvel slate announcement was a reaction to the DC slate announcement. So, since 2012 or 2013, these movies have been on the same dates. You knew that Justice League was going to be 2 weeks after Thor the entire time. And if at any point over the last year and a half in the development of this film, you felt like that was going to impede on your ability to make the most money possible, move. And in the process of moving, it will allow you to create a better movie going forward. And maybe make more money. We have them out there, the statement that Warner Brothers put out about, well, Last Jedi doesn't come out for another 28 days. Coco's out now, or about to come out.
Wednesday, yeah.
But... like, we feel strongly that we can have legs and we can make money. That's fine, but it looks like you're going to be a Transformers-type movie where you're going to make more overseas than you are domestically. And, you know, that's just... when Fox is making $800 million with Deadpool and greenlighting a New Mutants movie that looks like a horror film and is promoting a neo-Western in Logan for an Oscar... and Marvel is banking $800 million from Thor. And you've got Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, The Flash, and Cyborg on screen together for the first time in history in a live-action movie. And you're not reaping immense benefits. That should tell you that you've made mistakes. And it should tell you that it's time to go forward with your new vision. You know, we complained all the time, right, about Johns and how much emphasis did Johns have, and then they painted Johns as the savior of all mankind. Well, we only have seen one film that was truly influenced by Geoff Johns, and that was the one that everybody loves, yep. Wonder Woman. So, take your hit and move on. If you don't want to take your hit and you want to create the best movie possible, move. But if you stay on that release date, everything else be damned, you don't have a right to be surprised if you don't produce a quality film. Chasing a release date is never good.
Now, the thing that's probably that's going to drive most of what they're going to do is, as you said, you know, Marvel announced their slate and this big grand faction. DC announced their slate on a conference call with investors.
2 weeks later. 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks earlier.
But it's the investor part that's right. the thing. Because they're the ones that's going to drive this. And they're going to see this. And they're going to take a hit. And they're going to throw it. They're going to want blood. Now, if you know that's what's going to happen, and you know the investors are coming for you, then you can't just take this. You need to move. You right. need to move to make the best movie possible to make the most money.
Or you're going to make the argument that we have a surprise hit in it. You know, we've had a few other movies this year that have done really well. This isn't going to blow our fourth quarter earnings out the water. You know, it's not going to cause us to have to take a $280 million write-off or anything. We'll be good. We just won't make, you know, $1 billion. Which, I mean, if Dawn of Justice didn't do $1 billion, why Justice League was going to do $1 billion is beyond me.
I never got the people to say it was going to do $1 billion. But, they're financially fine because of Wonder Woman and because of It. They've made a lot of money off of those. I think this one might come close to hitting break-even point. I don't think it'll get much more than that. And that's going to be pathetic because that's going to be around $650.
And it was crazy to just watch the reports trickle in as early as Friday morning about, like, the estimates and just seeing the estimates just going down and down and down. Because when we did the podcast Friday night, the estimates were, you know, you were at 130, I was at 125, and here we are at 93, 94?
I think when we did the podcast, the estimates were, like, around 110, and we figured it would go over because that's typically what happens with this kind of stuff. But for it to tank that much... I understand them being concerned, but
right. And go look at the you know, everybody's just been reading the cursory like headline articles in on different entertainment sites about the box office, because you know every entertainment site has that one guy who does their reports all come from Box Office Mojo. Mm-hmm. If you go to Box Office Mojo and you read Box Office Mojo's assessment of the weekend, it will break down for you in statistical data what the drop-off was between Thursday and between the 13 million they made in Friday Thursday night previews, the Friday and to Saturday drop, and the Saturday to Sunday drop. And that in turn tells you that word of mouth was negative, which has led to some DC fanboys saying that critics had the knives out for this film because they wanted to kill the film because of what happened with Dawn of Justice, what happened with Suicide Squad, and so they deterred public interest from this movie.
Do I think some critics are overly harsh on these movies, particular DC ones? Yes, but do I think it's enough of them that's like, is it a big conspiracy between all of them to tank the movie? No. And I don't think there's enough of them that are overly harsh that actually makes a dent.
And I don't know of anybody anymore who uses actual reviews as a basis for going to see a movie. I know people who will look up what a Rotten Tomatoes score is and go based on that.
Yeah, that's why they get mad, because you know they know Rotten Tomatoes scores are composed of all these critics. So when they see the score, they just get mad at all the critics. And when you do Rotten Tomatoes, I kind of implore people not to just look at the percent.
Right.
Actually, look at what it is, the composite out of 10. Because a lot of times they'll have those rotten movies, but they'll be like 6.5 out of 10. Okay, so that's like average or a little bit above average. So, and I haven't looked at that one in a while. I don't know if that's what this composite is or not. But
I mean, the drop-off from Friday to Saturday and Saturday to Sunday shows word of mouth. People see the movie, they go out and they talk about it with friends. It's why Get Out had so many legs. That's why Split had so many legs. You know, it's why It had so many legs, because people saw it, they went around talking about it with friends, and they became cultural moments, all three of those. It can also work the reverse way. Five people go to see Geostorm, they figure out it's a bad movie, they tell everybody it's a bad movie, and no one goes to see it except for me. And, you know, that's the way that that works. But those those drops would indicate that there was an decent amount of word of mouth that was negative.
Especially when you consider that on Friday, Justice League had earned more than Wonder Woman had earned on its Friday. But, like, in the same report that I saw that it earned more than Wonder Woman on its Friday, it also said this movie's getting drubbed and it's going to make less than $100 million. Like, it's guaranteed because of the word of mouth. And true be told, like, it went down from, I mean, it was 38 on Friday, 32 on Saturday, 22 on Sunday. Let's see if I can get to Wonder Woman to see what that one did, because it was around the same. Come on,
give me a picture. But, I mean, it that's a steep drop Saturday to Sunday. And, I mean, the Thor comparisons, like, I get that it irks you that your version of the Avengers did not make a whole bunch of money, and a solo movie or a team-up movie with Hulk did more. But Thor and Hulk have been around since 2011 and 2008, respectively. They built up a fan base and a culture. Yes, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, and The Flash, and Aquaman, they have brand name recognition. But these iterations of the character outside of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, you haven't really developed very well. So the audience doesn't really know them. There's not that affinity for the characters. And so you can't really be like... And that's kind of been Warner Brothers' whole problem. They've been rushing to try and get to the MCU model. They've been rushing to try and get to their version of the Avengers. And they want to get there in four films, not six or seven. They want to get there in three films, really. Man of Steel, Dawn of Justice, and Justice League. Wonder Woman thrown in there, so four. They want to get there in four films, because Suicide Squad has nothing to do. Four films, whereas Marvel took six films to get to the Avengers.
See, I don't fault them for going this route. I think you could have made a Justice League movie before all the rest of them, if it was good.
Or if Dawn of Justice would have worked. If Dawn of Justice works, and I would love, and I can't wait for whoever writes the book, I would love to know why Zack decided that he needed to tell the Batman versus Superman story as a Man of Steel sequel. Like the place that you leave the character in Man of Steel does not immediately lend itself to darkness, no parents, Martha, like that, you know.
Well, I can tell you what my guess is, and that is Zach is a fan, like Zach to his core, like the comic books that attract him when he became of age was The Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, and that has like been ingrained into him. So when I really think it was his idea to bring in Batman. And I think he said as much. He said, when they were throwing around ideas, he said, what if you bring in Batman? And from that point, Zach's idea of what Batman was the Dark Knight Returns Batman. Well, if it's the Dark Knight Returns Batman, he beats the crap out of Superman in that movie. And that's how you get to this point. But so you bring in this really dark, brooding, just husk of a man that is Batman. So if he's going to be, like, he's way down in the muck. If he's way down in the muck, well, you left Superman, in my opinion, in Man of Steel, like, he's on the cusp of becoming the Superman everybody knows. But if you're breaking down heroes like Dark Knight Returns does, you got to break him all the way down. So that leaves him in an even darker place than he was in Man of Steel. And that's how all this starts.
Which is an odd place to go in a story-wise, given the reaction to Man of Steel. I mean, you know, what do we talk about when we talk about Man of Steel? We talk about, as we did on the podcast, you know, the let kids in the school bus die moment. We talk about, Pa Kent getting sucked up into a tornado. You know, we talk about, you know, that Superman, you know, going through his own version of rejecting society for a period of time. You know, it's not the Christopher Reeve Superman. It's not the Bryan Singer Superman. No. It's a completely different interpretation that is building toward a position where he is ready to take on his mantle and his legacy and be the guy that we always know. That the reaction to Man of Steel was so divisive, the final scene of the final battle of in Metropolis, the amount of collateral damage, although he had less collateral damage in that movie, I'd argue, than any Transformers film, and then the decision to have him snap Zod's neck.
Which was a Zach decision.
That was extremely divisive, even though it had history behind it. And it fundamentally changes the view of the character from Reeves and Singer.
On that note, also from this weekend, I've heard that the version of the script that Goyer first wrote is, like, amazing. It is not the same thing we got on the screen because, you know, Zach came in and did some Zach thing. So I'm curious about that.
His version of Man of Steel?
Goyer wrote it.
Right.
But it's the basic story, but Zach takes his directing liberties. But I've heard the script, like, that Goyer actually wrote is a lot better. So that's just another thing that just popped out of this weekend. I don't know how true that is. I kind of want to find out now.
Yeah, talk about another guy who gets dumped on by the internet.
Yeah.
But that, to me, is where it doesn't, like, this doesn't go back to a year and a half ago in the decision to rush into production on Justice League and chase a release date. It doesn't go back to giving Man his cut of Dawn of Justice a standing ovation and then, you know, being shocked at the box office response. To me, it goes back to the decision to announce in July at Comic-Con, 4 weeks after Man of Steel comes out, we're doing Batman versus Superman.
So,
because if you do Batman versus Superman, like you said, from his interpretation, you're going to invite more division and more strife than you already have, and you push that release date back 3 times and landed in March of 2015, and you were 2016, and you were still okay.
So, what goes into all that is that, you know, Warner Brothers wanted to be the auteurs. Zach did Man of Steel. They were happy enough for Man of Steel we're going to let him do what he wants to do. And this is how we got Dawn of Justice. I know Warner Brothers, since they want to be auteurs, they don't want to have that kind of oversight over their directors. However, I think specifically with characters like this, and we see it in other things like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, like directors can come in and work with this material and they can come in and have their influences, but there's a core understanding of what the stories and particularly what the characters are, and somebody's there to say, this is what the characters are. You can do stuff as long as it doesn't betray the characters.
Right. If David Fincher comes in and says, I want to do a take on Harry Potter where he's an alcoholic kid dealing with the ravages of losing his parents and just is mad and angry at the world and wants to use his powers for evil, they're going to tell him to take a hike.
Yeah. And it's the same basic thing with this. Like, I know people think Man of Steel is divisive, but while it is divisive,
and was divisive to the fan base,
That is Zach reined in. Like, mm-hmm. Nolan may not have been all hands on, but I know he was there because Zach had to convince him that Superman should snap Zod's neck. That was a conversation they had. So I know that there was some conversation they had, and Zach lost. So that was Zach reined in. Batman vs Superman, that is the only thing that was over Zach, was that, like, you ain't giving us a 3-hour movie, cut some of this crap out. But the rest of that is just Zach. And that is because they let him be an auteur, and that's what he gave you. And if you want to let him do that, that's fine. But you know, if you're doing it with these characters and people feel certain types of ways about these characters, lots of them are going to reject that. So,
which goes back to what Debbie Snyder said on that set, on the set visit, which was, we have learned that people do not like their superheroes deconstructed.
If you have somebody there to tell you, this is what the core of the characters are, like, this story that you want to tell, this is like the end of the superhero story. You can't do this now. I don't think you should ever do it, but if you wanted to do it, you've got to do it like 15 years down the line. We're about to kick Ben and Henry to the curb. Then you can have them have this all-out brawl and tear each other down because we've seen them before. You can't do this now.
Can't do Civil War in film four.
Not the way you did it, no. So the and it looks like we're getting to the point where if they're actually going to do what they said they're doing, Geoff Johns and John Byrne are going to be those ones to step in and be like, this is what the characters are. You can do whatever you want as long as you keep it to with the characters. But because of all this and because Warner Brothers is so goddamn reactionary, they could just blow this all up. Like, they could really just come in.
Can't blow it up. You've got an Aquaman movie that is in the can.
You've got Aquaman in the can. You can't. Jason Momoa is safe right now. Wonder Woman, you're an idiot. If you do anything with Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman is safe right now. But the rest of them, we know Ben's gone. Like, it's not confirmed, but Ben is gone. If he wasn't gone before this, and I think he was,
well, he's gone now. I do buy the story that the guy put out that, like, Warner Brothers leaked out the Jake Gyllenhaal news to kind of coax an official decision from Ben as to whether or not he was actually going to stay or go.
If like, an official Warner Brothers person is like, let's leak this out to, like, coax this out, that is fine. You don't do it 3 days before the goddamn movie comes out. If somebody from Warner Brothers thought this was a good idea to coax Ben out, was to drop this news 3 days before a movie that's already embattled is coming out, you're losing your job. You need to lose your job because the ad is stupid. It's beyond stupid.
But Chad, it was probably the same guy who at the premiere for Suicide Squad pulled the person over from Hollywood Reporter and was like, let me tell you exactly what happened here.
But again, because they leak like sieves, and they have, I'd imagine Warner Brothers, the studio lot, is like Game of Thrones and Westeros, and there's these different factions, and they're all vying
for the roller coaster man.
They're all vying to be the one that sits in the water tower on the Warner Brothers lot. That's what they're all doing. So there's whenever they hear stuff, they gotta go leak it to somebody here, leak it to somebody there. And it just ends up shooting them all in the foot. But that comes from the top down.
One team, one heartbeat, Chad.
If you were one team, one heartbeat, the dude at the top be like, y'all keep doing it, I'm messing all of y'all up. Everybody gone. And then it stops. But they don't respect the guy at the top. So, and back to that, and because they're going to be so reactionary, and the guy at the top is going to be like shaking his boots because the investors are going to come chew him out for this movie. And people they're going to demand a pound of flesh. So the pound of flesh is going to be some lost jobs. But does it also mean the pound of flesh is going to be that you finally gotten to a point with this franchise where the people that have gone out of it, like the ones that have seen it, they're like, I don't like the movie, but you're starting in a good place. Yeah, you're going to have to work over some goodwill, which is why Aquaman might be a good thing. Wonder Woman is going to be a good thing. If you can keep goodwill for those two, then you can come back and slide in the Flash movie, slide in the Superman movie, and not have to blow this all up. But if your pound of flesh is, you got to fire a bunch of folks, and you got to blow this up, and it's going to be convoluted because you're blowing it up, and keeping Jason Momoa for at least one movie, and Gal Gadot, but then you're jettisoning everything else, what do you look like then?
Chad, let me take you back to San Diego Comic-Con. They flashed the Warner Brothers, DC portion of the Warner Brothers presentation begins with a series of flash cards put up on the screen with title treatments on them. One of the title treatments that generated the most reaction from that list was Flashpoint.
I'm going to stop you right now. We are not talking about Flashpoint.
We're going to talk about the fact that you said on the Comic-Con podcast that this was the equivalent of Warner Brothers having their hand right above the self-destruct button. And depending on what was going to happen with Justice League, they could very well, in their craziness, decide that they need to hit that emergency red button and blow it all up with crazy comic book continuity, which allows them to do it through Flashpoint.
That is true. However, you mentioned crazy comic book continuity, and it's crazy for a reason, because you do stupid stuff like this, and it's hard to explain. And for movie-going audiences, you can do certain things, but once you start making it too complicated, they're going to be like, I'm out. The second thing is, yeah, they can hit that button, but the way movies work, it takes years to develop them. And as of right now, they have done jack squat with Flashpoint. Hell, they might be recasting people because of whatever's going on behind the scenes. They can't,
because they lost a director. Two directors.
Yeah. So they hit that button. It doesn't detonate at the earliest right now.
2020.
Yes. 3 years from now. 3 years from now, they blow it up. So, and this analogy explains Warner Brothers perfectly. They hit the panic button, but it doesn't blow up for 3 years. And you don't know, and you could have had a whole good string of hits between right now and this panic button, but you just blew it all up. So once 2020 gets here, it's like, well, hell, what am I doing? So what they need to do, step away from that table, go to Geoff Johns and be like, all right, we're going to forget all these other movies, this separate line that we're going to do. I hate the idea, but I'm going to say it like from them. We're going to put this to the side right now. Coming out of Justice League, people like these characters. We can't do another Justice League movie for a while. We need to establish, we have to work with what we have. We have an Aquaman movie in the can. Wonder Woman's coming down the pike. They're working on Shazam. That could be a fun thing. The Batman is coming. And we need to do a Superman movie. We need to get these all out. And we need to get these right. Let's do those. Once we get to, not Wonder Woman, the one, whatever movie comes after Wonder Woman, let's get to that movie. That movie is fine, and we've got these other two working in the can. Then let's say we come back to Justice League, and after we get to like Superman, we'll do Justice League, and we'll have this separate title, because we've built them up across a string of movies that people have liked, and now we can do these things. Your this foundation is really shaky. However, it's a chance to reset. People liked Aquaman. They like James Wan. They'll give that movie a chance. People love Wonder Woman. They love Gal Gadot. They're going to give that movie a chance. You get those two right, you just got to give them another one.
And you got Shazam in between.
Shazam's coming out between.
And if you get and those most general audiences will not correlate that that's a DC property anymore.
You're going to have to tell them.
Right.
If you get those three right, the next movie after Wonder Woman should probably be The Batman. Everybody's going to go see Batman. If you got those right, and then you finally get them a Superman movie that everybody can agree on, everybody's back on board, you can try this Justice League thing, and then expand to these other movies that you've been promising us that are now going to be 6 years down the road.
But Chad, there's this this thing where we're going to put Jake Gyllenhaal in the Batman with Alfred and J.K. Simmons and Jeremy Irons, and everything's going to be fine, Chad.
Of all the things that come out this weekend, the least offensive thing to me is replacing Ben Affleck as Batman. You can do Jake Gyllenhaal. I've come around on it. I don't care. I don't care who you put in the suit. Fine. Whatever. If you keep all the people that you thought you were keeping, like J.K. Simmons and Jeremy Irons, and you really make this a continuation, you're just recasting Batman. And we've had 5 of them. And 3 of them were in the same series. They were the same guys, the same actual Batman, 3 different guys. And people, with the exception of the last one, were fine with it. Recasting Batman, and hell, recasting any of these characters should be like recasting James Bond. It happens, people accept it, and move on.
Okay. Because that's totally a thing that they're going to do.
Yeah, that is going to happen. Out of everything I've said, that is the thing that will happen.
So you've expressed what they should do. What do you think they will do?
I have no idea. And that's the thing. That is the goddamn frustrating thing. I have absolutely no idea what they're going to do. Because everybody has an opinion and nobody really knows what these crazy suckers are going to do behind closed doors. And we probably won't know for another month. They're going to...
How well over Christmas?
They're going to let this drag... that's right. Because in a month it's going to be Christmas. Hollywood shuts down for Christmas. We're not going to find out what's going to happen with this stuff until like February. So, yeah, I have no idea what they're going to do. I think they're reactionary enough that they will blow this up and try to reboot in a few years, but keep Jason Momoa, at least for the first Aquaman, and definitely keep Gal Gadot. I think they're stupid, but they're dumb enough to do it. Somebody could come in with a steady hand and be like, no, this is what we're going to do, and then we're going to stay this course. However, for that to happen, Kevin Tsujihara is going to have to get fired. And I think there's a good chance that Kevin Tsujihara is going to get fired. Whoever was the one that greenlit, we're going to go all the way back to Batman vs. Superman. Whoever greenlit that, and then subsequently whoever greenlit Justice League, and then whoever let them go forward without moving that date, if that probably the same person. Because if it's the same person,
head
that person,
of production, yeah.
That person, gone. Like,
should have been packing his office on Friday.
Yeah, they might not announce it right now, but he's already gone, out the door, done. And there's going to be a bunch of people with him. But I don't know. That's the whole frustrating thing. I have no idea what they're going to do because they're stupid. Okay. Might want to wrap this up. My blood pressure going up again.
Yeah. So, in the end, what it comes down to is they cast their lot with a guy who did Sucker Punch.
See, I don't want this to come off as blaming Zach.
No, it they doubled down on Zach's vision. They like you said, they had protections and safeguards in place on Man of Steel. They took those safeguards and protections away and allowed him to make his movie on Dawn of Justice. And then they doubled down on that by saying, we're going to start building sets and have the movie ready to go into production 2 days after Dawn of Justice comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Basically boxing yourself into this hole.
Yep.
Remember, we had that running joke about, are they actually shooting it? I haven't seen any pictures.
Yes, we did.
Like,
For 3 months.
And now we know why. But, like, if you didn't, like... We both know that they wanted Nolan to be a large part of this. They offered Nolan Justice League back in the day. They wanted him to be the godfather of their cinematic universe. And he would have had a singular vision that was accepted by most people. The problem with Zach is Zach filled that role, and almost all of Zach's stuff, except for maybe Watchmen, is divisive.
The only one that's not divisive is 300.
300.
Watchmen is very divisive.
Right. So, you know... You hired and you backed that guy to run your cinematic universe in a day and age where Marvel's light, campy, and fun and making a whole lot of money with Guardians of the Galaxy and Talking Trees and Raccoons. And this is a guy who comes up in abstract darkness, deconstructionist superhero mythologies of the 1980s. So how was that? You trusted him? You let him ride, and when you realized you made a mistake, it was too late to go back. So this really does go back on betting on Zach and that horse not panning out.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel bet on Joss Whedon to do the Avengers and have the craziest experiment in cinema work, and guess what? We're now 18 movies down the road and $6 billion in the bank because it worked and because they trusted that vision. And he worked with Feige, who had already established the vision.
And that's the thing. Joss's vision was for one solo movie. Warner Brothers decided to turn to Zach, and Zach was basically constructing the whole universe.
Three movies.
Came out of three movies. Instead of having somebody guiding Zach through his movie, like Joss had with Feige.
Or having one person do Man of Steel, having another person do Batman vs. Superman, and having a third person do Justice League.
Yeah, but I don't think you get Batman or Superman without Zach. Because I really think it was his idea. And because it was his idea, he got to run with it. And he'd done Man of Steel. And they were, you know, they were still happy with that. But you could like when they announced that he was going to do Justice League 1 and 2, I'm like, that's a little bit too much.
Justice League Part 1 and 2 was on that on that conference call.
Yeah, who knows?
Because remember, they were supposed to defeat Steppenwolf, and then that was supposed to lead into Darkseid.
Yep. In that regard, maybe it's a blessing in disguise, because I don't think they need to go straight into Darkseid.
And that was a direct response. And then Marvel responded by doing Infinity War Part 1 and 2, which they're actually going to get to.
Yeah.
But and then we also have to talk about the fact that we've got a setup for an Injustice movie that is nowhere near...
I think
you could possibly do it in a Justice League 2, but like right now, there's no...
Yeah, there's no Justice League 2 in sight.
And there's no... When are we going to see Deadshot again? Deathstroke again? When are we going to see Lex Luthor again? Like, what?
I'm fine if... Well,
I mean, none of their post-credit stingers have really been awesome.
They've only had three.
Yeah.
And, I would argue the best one is the one... The second one. The first one in this one. Because it's just Flash and Superman. I think in the Injustice... the Injustice League or whatever. I forget what they're called. That is cool for Justice League 2. We just had to get there. And Lord knows if we're ever going to do that.
I have a funny feeling there'll be some job openings at Warner Brothers Distribution.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they will. I don't know if I want to work over there now.
All right. So those are our weekend update thoughts on DC's Expanded Universe, which they no longer want us to call it that, and the Justice League. Now, in other news, Chad, we got a set visit today, a EW spread on Star Wars.
I didn't even have a chance to look at it yet.
Your thoughts on the idea of playing up the dueling of the fates between Kylo Ren and Rey?
Everybody knows it's going to eventually come down to that, so why not play it up? And the fact that we have no idea how they're going to play it up in this movie? Yeah, just keep picking on that. It's the easiest thing to do.
And your thoughts on the fact that there was a Lucasfilm documentary crew with Mark Hamill the day that he stepped back on the set of the Millennium Falcon?
Oh, that was whoever thought of that, that's a brilliant ass idea. Yes, I want to see that. I want to see that right now. Whoever thought of this, that is genius. I never thought of that, and now I'm like, I just want to see that. Like, I want to see that right now.
And your thoughts on Poe Dameron conflicting with Admiral Haydu, or Helidu, Laura Dern's character, who is now taking over the Resistance from Leia because, people will stop trusting the woman who birthed the leader of the other side.
I think that should make for an interesting dynamic. From what little we've seen, I kind of thought it was going that way between her and Leia.
Who knew each other when they were kids, according to Expanded Universe canon.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's something new, and that should be fun.
Something that was touched on in Rogue One was the idea of a fractured rebellion. Mm-hmm. The idea of not necessarily knowing what tactics were the best. You've got, Diego Luna's character being told, forget what you heard in that meeting. You get a clean shot at this dude, you kill him because we don't know what he's actually told the other side. Like, and here's, Mon Mothra, totally not advocating killing another human being. So, you have different... You've got Admiral Akbar saying, we need to follow Jyn Erso and go help her. And you've got these people over here saying, if we fire a shot, they come after us and destroy us all. We're just not ready to fire shots. So, they very much played up that fractured rebellion, different factions having different ideas of how to go about achieving the same end and trying to find a leader who could unite all of those different ideologies into a single ideology that promoted a single purpose-driven plan. A practical real-world example would have been we declare victory in Iraq, mission accomplished, and then it's like, things are still bad, what do we do, how do we fix it? And so you go to a guy there's 50 different people saying how you fix Iraq, and then you go to your generals, and they're like, a surge. And so they institute the surge policy. And the surge policy becomes the, you know, the unified, this is how we fix Iraq, you know, answer. It's the same way here. The problem is, in a Force Awakens, post-Force Awakens world, Rian Johnson has said it, and Oscar Isaac says it in the piece in EW. They blew up the Galactic Senate.
Yeah.
They blew up that whole system. Not just the planet, the whole system. So most of your resistance ships were there. They're gone. All of your funding was coming from the Galactic Senate. They're gone. So you're now down to whatever number of ships you had before, and you have no funds. So that makes it tricky. And then, like, there are members of the resistance who are like, she birthed the woman who's the guy who's coming to kill us all. She probably is a little bit biased in her decision making. Like, let's get a nonpartisan person to come in here and make decisions. And then you get a nonpartisan person to come in there and make the decisions, and then it's like, she's been too nice. We need to go about dropping bombs. And big bombs. Now. And so, as you can imagine, faithful lieutenants to the other person don't tend to want to carry out those orders. And so that creates a friction, and that's good storytelling.
Yeah, I would agree.
Your thoughts on the Ice Wolves? Or the...
Ice Foxes.
Crystal Foxes.
Crystal Foxes. What do they do?
They've been on that on Crait the entire time. See, Crait was a rebel base that was founded by Bail Organa. Who was Leia's father.
Yeah.
During the Resistance, during the time period of Rebels and A New Hope. So it was used as a rebel base back then. It's on a mineral mine, which is where you see the red smoke and the what looks like a pod race type deal as the two sides are coming together at the end. And these creatures have been a part of Crait for the entire time, and they've become so tied in that they've been eating the surface, and so the surface has ingrained itself into their DNA, and now, you know, their bodies are an extension of the surface and have the same kind of crystals.
All right. Another cute critter from my daughter.
And they put straws on a dog and let the dog run around and play and put motion capture dots on the dog so that they could get the movement of the straws to mimic the movement, how the crystals would move on the on the wolf.
That is neat. Good job, Star Wars.
Yeah, but we also live in a world where, you know, we have Hulk Guy and Hulk Guy number two who holds the head of it.
Yeah, Green Steve.
Yeah, Green Steve and you know, Andy Serkis. And Andy Serkis just playing every mammal known to mankind. So, I mean, we've come a little way since the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
All right, so that'll about do it on this week's episode. If you want to keep up with this DC-loving podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan, and I certainly do not hate DC films.
And I am at The Mist Theory, and the fact that my blood pressure has risen so much, you can tell that I love DC films.
All right. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.